was no saying what they would do now or whose side they were on. Even though it was a long shot, I strung an arrow through my bow and aimed it at the dragon in the back of the pack. But it was too late. The dragons flew at supernatural speed, and they were already out of range. The arrow missed, and the dragons flew into the night, disappearing over the horizon.
"They're flying east," Danielle said,
staring out at where they'd disappeared.
"Mount Etna is east," Blake said. "It can't be a coincidence that they're heading that way."
"Greece is east as well," Chris pointed out. "Maybe they're just flying home."
"What'll happen when the humans see them?" I asked. "Won't they freak out?"
"Unless they come into direct physical contact with them, they won't be able to see them," Blake explained. "Their minds can't process magic like ours can. We can see the dragons, but a human would probably just think they were seeing large birds."
"So Becca was only able to see the true form of the harpy because the harpy touched her," I realized.
"Yes," Kate nodded, gazing off into the sky. "And with so many creatures escaping, there will be more of them on Earth than there have been in thousands of years. Even if we succeed in stopping Typhon and the Titans, after this, the world will never be the same."
Chapter 23. Before I knew it, we were standing in Darius's living room, in our gear with our weapons, waiting for Hypatia to create the portal to Mount Etna. She'd been in Italy for a few days, making sure everything was prepared for our arrival. I paced around, unable to stay still, as I went over the plan in my mind. I wanted to feel ready, but I didn't. How could I ever feel ready for something like this? We'd been doing meditation exercises for the past hour, focusing on yellow and orange energy, focus and strength, to prepare us for the upcoming fight. I'd also been calling upon blue energy to help calm down. It helped, but I still felt jittery. After all, most of the other times we'd gone off into a big fight, like when we left for Greece, Antarctica, and Kerberos, we'd been thrown into it without having much time to worry. The only other time we'd had time to train and prepare was for Medusa. Typhon was going to make the fight with Medusa look easy. The only thing keeping me from completely freaking out was the knowledge that out of all the witches and demigods in the world, we were the ones chosen by the gods to complete this task. They wouldn't have selected us if they didn't believe we were capable of succeeding. If the gods believed in us, then I had to believe in us too.
"You okay?"
Blake walked up to me and took both of my hands in his. The moment he did, calmness rushed through my veins. Blue energy. Instead of using the blue energy to calm himself down, Blake had sent it to me. "Thanks," I told him, giving his hands a small squeeze. "You didn't have to do that. I'm sure you need the blue energy for yourself."
"You needed it more than me," he insisted. "I know you might not admit it, but I could tell."
I nodded, because he was right. Then I gathered red energy, courage and love, and sent it toward him. He held my hands tighter, his gaze intense, and sent me back red energy in return. We would all make it through this. We had to. I'd already lost Blake once. I couldn't lose him again. But I couldn't push down the knowledge that there was a chance we wouldn't make it. Despite our powers, we weren't immune to death. Except for Kate, of course, since she was now immortal. Darius's phone rang, and my heart pounded faster, knowing it had to be Hypatia.
"She is ready to create the portal,"
Darius said after hanging up. I nodded, and Blake and I made our way to the center of the room to join the others. Kate held on to the backpack with Medusa's head,
As the only immortal in the group, it was safest for her to be in charge of it. She and Chris were holding hands, and Danielle stood as strong as ever, a warrior princess ready to fight.
You all know the plan?
Darius looked around at each of us, his eyes brimming with concern.
I've trained you the best that I can in the time we've been allowed. You fought some of the most dangerous monsters in history. And while you may not have killed all of them, you've managed to survive. The five of you are the strongest-willed and most resilient people I've ever known, and I'm honored to be your teacher. So go out there today, knowing that you're trained and ready, and make me proud.
We will,
Chris said, his voice strong and confident.
We're the elementals. You can count on us. Always.
Then Hypatia created the portal, and together, the five of us stepped through. Chapter 24. The end of the world looked like it had already hit the island of Sicily, Italy. The sun hadn't risen yet, but I could still make out the volcano looming out in the distance. Gray clouds and ash pouring from the crater and emptying out into the sky. We'd portaled straight onto a helicopter tarmac, where one helicopter waited for us, along with a pilot. I recognized the pilot as one of the witches who had been on the crew of the yacht in Greece.
Ash has been rising from the volcano for the past week, Hypatia informed us. Geologists are baffled. But I think it's safe to say that if Typhon frees himself from the volcano, this disaster will be worse than when Poseidon lost his temper in 1906 and caused the great San Francisco earthquake. If Typhon fully escapes, this entire island could be blown to pieces.
We'll stop him before it gets that far,
Blake said.
Exactly,
Kate nodded.
The first thing he'll see when his head emerges from that crater will be Medusa's gaze.
And the moment Typhon's finished off, I'll create a portal large enough for the helicopter to fly through and bring us back to Kinsley,
Hypatia said. I still don't like that you're risking yourself by coming with us, I told her. I know we need a head elder with us to create the portal home, since it's the only way to know our exact location once the fight is over. But can't it be someone else? I don't understand why it has to be you. I'd been worried about Hypatia coming with us since she first told us about that part of the plan days ago. Yes, she was a head elder, which made her powerful. But she didn't have close to the amount of power that the five of us elementals had. She wouldn't be able to do much of anything in the fight against Typhon, if it came to a fight at all. She was just another person who I'd come to care about, who would be risking her life for us.
If not me, then who else?
She asked.
I've been with the five of you since you journeyed through Greece to slay the Hydra. I know what the five of you can do. I've seen it firsthand, and I believe in you. I'm proud to accompany you on this mission.
Thank you, I told her, since she clearly wasn't budging on this. We won't let you down. But even as I said the words, I wished I could believe that everything would go as planned, as much as everyone else. How were they so confident when I felt like a wreck inside?
You guys,
the helicopter pilot said, pointing up at the sky.
Are those what I think they are? Because if they are, then we're in big trouble.
I turned around to look where he was pointing, and saw six orange dragons flying through the sky, heading straight in our direction. Crap, I thought, panic rising in my throat as they got closer. This was not in our plan of how things were supposed to go this morning. Chapter 25. Kate reached for her bag.
Get ready to close your eyes, she warned, because I'm turning these dragons to stone.
Wait, I reached forward, stopping her from unzipping the bag. Her eyes widened, and she looked at me like I was crazy. But she didn't try to push me aside, which I assumed meant she was willing to listen. "We've worked with these dragons before," I spoke quickly, since the dragons were getting closer. "I know that they're Helios's solar dragons, but their only loyalty is to themselves. If we can offer them something they want, they might help us in this fight."
"I already gave them my sword once."
Danielle held the golden sword in the air, ready to fight.
"I'm not giving it up again."
"Then what are we offering them?" Chris asked. "We need to think quick, because they're almost here."
"We'll figure it out," I said. "For now, let's see if they would be willing to make a deal and side with us against Typhon."
"We also need to be ready to fight, just in case."
Blake held his lighter in one hand and his sword in the other.
"At least this time, I'm here to protect you from their fire."
I nodded, since I knew he said that to be comforting, and that his power could save us if the dragons attacked. But I hated the thought of him using up energy before the fight with Typhon. Hopefully, it wouldn't come to that.
"And I've got Medusa's head, ready to whip out the moment the dragons make it clear they're not cooperating," Kate said. "But you're right. The more numbers we have on our side against Typhon, the better. Plus, if these dragons have any sense of self-preservation, and from what you've told me about your previous encounter with them, they do, it's in their best interest to side with us."
"They will side with us," I said, trying to convince myself as much as the others. Because while I believed we had a chance, they were also dragons. Could any of us truly know what they would do?
"Hold down your weapon so they know we don't want to fight."
Kate stepped forward, the wind whipping around her hair as she stared out at the approaching dragons.
"But still be on guard and ready to use them if necessary."
I did as she said and lowered my bow to my side. The others did the same with their weapons.
"We don't want to fight you,"
I yelled once they were within hearing range. They stopped flying toward us, and they flapped their wings to fly in place overhead. I assumed that meant they were listening.
"We've worked with you before,"
I continued, speaking loudly to project my voice.
"It happened in another timeline, so you won't remember it. But you accepted a deal from us in exchange for your help. I think we can work out another deal today, if you'll give us a chance and hear us out."
They looked to the largest dragon in front of their formation. I assumed he was their leader. I held my breath in anticipation. This was a huge risk, because we couldn't afford to weaken our energy by using our powers right now. But if the dragons chose to attack, we would have no choice but to fight back. Luckily, the leader lowered himself to the ground and shifted to his human form. Tall, strong, and pale, with bright auburn hair. I recognized him from the first time I met him in Kerberos. But of course, he didn't recognize me, since the timeline when we'd met had been erased. The others in the pack followed his lead and shifted into their human forms. They all had similar skin and hair colors, and like before, they were all naked. I supposed it didn't make sense for them to bother with clothes, since they would rip them apart every time they shifted.
"The only way you could remember another timeline is if Kronos allowed you to travel through a time portal,"
the dragon leader finally spoke, his voice low and steady.
"He did this for you?"
"Yes," I nodded. "The primordial deities want us to succeed in defeating Typhon and sealing the portal to Kerberos. We failed in the original timeline, but since the primordial deities are on our side, Kronos allowed Danielle and me to travel through a time portal to correct our mistakes. There's no time right now to get into specifics, but I hope you take my word that in the previous timeline, we worked out a deal and you helped us on our quest. We hope you'll be able to agree to another deal with us today."
"Especially since Helios has been banished to Tartarus, So you're now free to act independently from him, Kate chimed in.
We are dragons,
the leader reminded us, although we hardly needed reminding.
Yes, we drove Helios's chariot around the sun and worked out many mutually beneficial deals with him. But we always act independently and in our best interests. The Olympians should have known that about us before banishing us to Kerberos with the rest of the creatures who sided against them in the Second Rebellion.
They should have, Danielle agreed. But we all know that the Olympians are far from perfect, and they, and the primordial deities, are on our side in this war. We're going to win, and if you help us today, they'll be forced to take notice, and you'll be rewarded for your bravery.
Rewarded how?
The leader's mate stepped forward and raised an eyebrow.
Are you making us an offer?
Yes. I stepped forward as well, crossing my fingers that this would work. If you help us fight Typhon today, and do not turn on us afterward, we promise you protection by the 12 Olympians. You will be forgiven for your previous crimes against them, and once this war is over, you'll get a clean slate.
Who are you to make such a lofty promise?
The pack leader asked.
I don't see any Olympians here with you today. How can we know that this deal will be kept?
I am Nicole Cassidy, daughter of the god Apollo, and gifted with power over the element of spirit. I raise my head high, standing strong and holding my gaze with his. And I swear on Zeus that the gods will cooperate with this agreement.
No, Hypatia gasped. If the gods don't accept, Zeus will be forced to kill you.
I know, I said. But it won't come to that, because they will accept. But as confident as I was trying to sound, I couldn't be 100% sure. It was simply a risk I needed to take. The first rays of sunlight were appearing over the horizon, and more ash was rising from the volcano by the second. We didn't have enough time to figure out what else the dragons would be willing to trade. In Kerberos, Erebus had warned us that dragons were selfish creatures who would only help others if it benefited them. I knew in my gut that this, guaranteed safety, was of the utmost value to them. Plus, they would attack us if we didn't strike a deal with them. Medusa's head could only turn them to stone one at a time, which would give them a chance to do some serious damage to us. Our chance of surviving a fight with 6 dragons and then having enough energy to win in the fight against Typhon was slim to none. So basically, we were dead if they didn't accept the offer. I only might be dead if they did accept the offer. Hopefully the gods would go along with the terms. If they refused, and I couldn't imagine why they would refuse, since these terms could save the world, I hoped that Apollo would go to bat for me and convince them to change their minds.
I also swear on Zeus that if you help us defeat Typhon, you'll be safe after the war,
Blake said, stepping up to stand next to me. He nodded at me once, as if telling me not to stop him from doing this. But I didn't plan on it, so I took his hand and squeezed it, hoping he got the message that I appreciated his support.
I swear on Zeus too, Kate said.
And soon, she was followed by Danielle, Chris, Hypatia, and even the helicopter pilot. We're all willing to risk our lives to ensure your safety, I told the dragons, more confident now that I had the support of the others. When we win, we're going to be on the right side of history, and we're offering you a spot there with us. But we don't have much time before the equinox, so we need an answer. Will you accept our offer and fight with us against Typhon? Will you be part of saving the world?
Chapter 26.
They didn't answer for a few seconds, and I stood frozen in fear, terrified they would refuse.
"We accept,"
the leader finally said. I let out a long breath of relief, able to move again. It worked. The dragons were going to fight with us. We still had a lot to work out from here, such as hoping the gods followed through on their end of the bargain. But at least it was a good first step.
That was easier than I thought it would be.
Kate lowered her hand from the bag, clearly accepting that she wouldn't need to use Medusa's head on the dragons, although she did look perplexed.
"You have Kronos on your side,"
the dragon leader explained.
"If we refused you, what would stop him from creating another time portal and sending you back through it to attack us the moment we escaped from Kerberos? It's a risk we cannot take. Plus,"
he continued, a smirk crossing his face,
"we never came here to hurt you. We always intended on helping you, so you would not force us back into that dreadful hell dimension. You only sweetened the deal by promising amnesty from the gods."
What? My mouth dropped open, shocked. Seriously?
"Yes,"
he said, his eyes twinkling in amusement.
"Seriously."
Then he stepped up to the helicopter and shook his head.
"Although I must say, your choice of transportation leaves much to be desired. If Typhon gets one of his hands around this clunky metal flying contraption, he will crush it in his fists."
"Then we'll have to make sure he doesn't get his hands on it, because it's the only mode of transportation that we have," Blake said. "We don't have time to find anything else."
"You may not,"
the female dragon said.
"But we do."
She put her fingers between her lips and whistled, and before I could blink, a golden chariot zoomed over the horizon and landed softly on the tarmac.
"Helios's golden chariot, at your service."
She dramatically motioned toward it, as if she were the fairy godmother who transformed a pumpkin into a carriage so Cinderella could get to the ball.
"It's indestructible. Not even the rays of the sun can melt it. And we will fly it for you, of course."
"But can we all fit in it?" Chris asked. "It only looks large enough for one person."
"The chariot will adjust in size to however many people it needs to carry,"
she explained.
"Step on board and see for yourself."
Chris's eyes bugged out. Apparently, he thought that was the coolest thing ever, and he rushed on board. Kate followed him, and just like the dragon promised, the chariot stretched and grew to accommodate her. It did the same when Danielle stepped on, too.
"How indestructible is this thing?"
Danielle raised the golden sword, and before I could scream for her to stop, she swung it down onto the edge of the chariot. It clanged against the metal, and she pulled the sword back to her side, examining the damage on the chariot.
"No dent,"
she confirmed.
"The chariot can't be destroyed, even by the golden sword of Athena."
"That's the true golden sword of Athena."
The dragon leader stared at it, practically salivating at the sight.
"Don't even think about it,"
Danielle scowled and pulled the sword closer.
"This sword is mine, and it's staying that way."
I smiled, glad that in this timeline, Danielle didn't have to give up the sword to the dragons.
"After you,"
Blake said, motioning for me to get on board the chariot next. I hopped onto the platform, and he held my hand, helping me. The moment I stepped on, the floor stretched again, and there was enough room for me to stand on it along with the others. I ran my fingers over the golden ledge of the chariot, marveling in the details of the carving. The vehicle was truly exquisite. Blake jumped on to join us, and it stretched out again to accommodate him.
"With the dragons flying the chariot, I suppose you don't have any use for me now,"
the helicopter pilot asked.
"I will create a portal home for you,"
Hypatia said. The portal appeared in front of him, and he stepped through it, disappearing from sight. You should go home as well, I told her, trying one last time. We have this covered, especially now that we have the dragons on our side.
Just because the mode of transportation has changed, it doesn't mean my plan to accompany you has changed,
Hypatia said, joining us on board.
You still need me to create the portal back home for you once Typhon is defeated.
We can fly them back to Kinsley in the chariot,
the dragon leader offered.
With our speed, the trip should only take a few hours.
That sounds like a good plan, I said to Hypatia. We can spare those few hours, and that way you won't have to risk yourself.
You cannot spare those few hours, she insisted. What if something goes wrong? I hope it doesn't, but we need to plan for the worst. I'm coming with you, and that's the end of this discussion.
She raised her chin in the air, signaling that the conversation was over, and I conceded. If she insisted on coming, we couldn't stop her, and we didn't have the time to convince her otherwise. Plus, she had a good point. Hypatia had guided us correctly so far. I knew better than to question her decisions now.
The equinox is close,
the dragon leader warned us.
Typhon will rise soon. Prepare and brace yourselves, because we must fly to the mountain now.
He and the others shifted into their dragon forms. They stepped in front of the chariot, and fire flew out from it, connecting like reins to their bodies. Then they spread their wings, and I held onto the ledge of the chariot as they launched into flight, pulling us up with them and straight toward the rumbling mountain. Chapter 27. We circled the sputtering mountain, waiting for the exact moment of the equinox. The dragons flew so smoothly that the floor of the chariot didn't even feel like it was moving beneath our feet. We stood strong and steady, staring out at the crater of the steaming volcano, ready for Typhon to rise. Kate had Medusa's head out and ready. The Gorgon's eyes were closed. It was too risky to keep them open. But Kate would open them the moment Typhon was looking at it. Which way will Typhon be facing when he rises from the crater? I turned to Hypatia, figuring she was most likely to know the answer.
There's no way to know, she replied. But once he rises, we have to get around to the correct side as fast as possible, hopefully before he's aware that we're here.
She glanced at her watch, the skin around her eyes creasing with worry.
One more minute until the equinox, she announced, and my heart raced, panic flooding my veins.
I reached for my bow, stringing an arrow through it and aiming it at the volcano. The others readied their weapons as well. Even though physical weapons weren't their best method of defense, their elemental powers were. Then the volcano exploded, booming so loudly that my head felt like it combusted right along with it. Smoke and ash rose from the crater, so thick that it blacked out my vision. My eyes burned, and I was forced to close them. I can't see, I yelled. But the moment I breathed in, my lungs filled with ash and smoke. I coughed and sputtered, holding my hands in front of my mouth, unable to breathe. The others coughed as well. At least the chariot was still flying, so the dragons must not be affected, which made sense, since they were fire breathers. I heard a loud, monstrous roar, so loud that the chariot vibrated from the strength of it. A sound that I dreaded came from Typhon himself. I tried to open my eyes again, but it was hopeless. All I saw was burning black ash before having to snap them shut. My eyes watered from pain, tears rolling down my cheeks. I was holding my breath, trying to avoid breathing in the soot, but it was impossible. My lungs begged for air. My head pounded, dizzy from the lack of oxygen. And soon enough, I was forced to give in and open my mouth for breath. When I did, the air was clear. I was still coughing and each breath still hurt. But I could breathe again. I opened my eyes, rubbing away the soot so I could see. The ash around the chariot was gone. A bubble of clean air surrounded us. I couldn't see further since the area outside the bubble was pitch black with ash, as if we were inside looking out from inside a snow globe.
What happened?
I tried to ask, but it came out as a croak, followed by another coughing fit. I called upon white energy, using it to heal myself from the smoke inhalation. Then I rested my hands on each of the others, healing them as well. What happened? I asked again, speaking clearly this time.
Ash and soot are part of the earth, Kate explained. I'm able to control it with my power. I'm going to have to clear it from around Typhon for us to be able to fight him. The moment I do, he'll know that we're here.
We have no other choice,
Blake said, standing strong and looking out in the direction of the volcano.
Do it.
She raised her arms, and the bubble pushed away the ash as it expanded, slowly revealing the gigantic monster. He was taller than a skyscraper, and he stood in the crater, his waist at its brim. Lava poured out of the volcano, traveling down the mountain and burning everything in its path. I knew Typhon would be huge, larger than the monster Scylla and Charybdis that we'd fought in Greece. But it still took all of my effort not to cower in fear, even though his back was toward us. He was covered in soot, but judging by his growls, he wasn't affected by it. Wings spanned from his shoulders, reminding me of the wings of a dragon, and snakes hissed and slithered around them. I shuddered as I realized that the snakes were part of him. They grew out of his scaly skin. But I had no time to think, because the snakes shot fire at us. There must have been more than 20 of them in all. Blake raised his hands, blocking the flames. But he didn't just block the flames. He turned them around and boomeranged them back to where they came, burning away Typhon's wings. Typhon roared, the sound nearly as loud as when the volcano erupted, throwing his hands down and arching his back in pain. Danielle used the opportunity to gather water from the air and shoot it toward the snakes, drenching them and stopping them from shooting any more fire at us. They hissed and shot something else from their mouths, a thick, black, gooey substance. A glob of it landed on my arm, and I shrieked from the burning pain. I looked down and saw it burning its way through my skin. Poison! I ducked down so the walls of the chariot could shield me from more of the poison, and the others did the same. Danielle must have seen the poison burning its way through my skin, because she aimed water toward it, washing away the black goo. Once it was gone, I healed my arm, letting out a long breath when the pain dissipated. Was anyone else hit? I asked. Both Chris and Hypatia answered that they had been, and Danielle and I worked together to heal them as well. But as we were working, the floor of the chariot started to tilt, and we slid toward the other side, balancing ourselves against its wall to keep ourselves from tumbling out over the edge. Something must have happened to the dragons. They'd been immune to the flames, but they must not be immune to the poison, and they were too far away for me to reach out and heal them. Perhaps their hides were strong enough to withstand it, but they shrieked from the pain. And then I heard a thud from below. It was followed by another thud, and then another. I sneaked a peek over the edge of the chariot. Sure enough, only 3 dragons remained. The others had fallen into the lava, broken and motionless. Fire shot up around their charred bodies. Despite being creatures of fire, there was no way they could have survived that. I averted my gaze and huddled back down, shaking at the sight of the death and devastation below. The remaining dragons had widened our circle, but the poison still shot around us. The snakes were stronger than I would have thought possible,
We're coming around to the front of Typhon,
Blake said, turning to Kate.
Use Medusa's head, now!
I can't while the snakes are shooting their poison, she said. If the poison destroys her eyes before Typhon looks into them, she'll be useless.
Then we have to kill the snakes. I got my bow ready and took a deep breath to prepare for the onslaught. Then I stood up, clearing my mind of all else but shooting the snakes in quick succession. They shot poison at me, but even though my body felt like it was on fire, I gritted through the pain. I just had to remind myself that each snake down was another step closer to defeating Typhon. Danielle joined me, using her power to throw ice daggers at them. Chris also stood and used his power to throw knives at them. And Blake, Kate, and Hypatia shot them down with guns. Typhon grunted as each snake died. He tried to swat at our chariot, but he was still stuck inside the crater of the volcano, and we remained out of his reach. All of the snakes were nearly gone. We were almost there, just a few more. But then another dragon went down. He hit the lava and fire exploded around him. We only had two dragons left, and a quick glance over at them showed me that the poison was burning its way through their wings. They were flying slower. They weren't going to last much longer. I shot more arrows, moving faster than humanly possible, letting them loose one after another until the final snake was dead. Once verifying that they were all gone, I ducked down again to huddle in the chariot, scrunching my eyes from the pain of the poison burning its way through my skin. Danielle created a shower of rain above us to wash off the poison, the burning ceasing as it slid off my skin. Once it had all been washed away, I used my power to heal us. Once finished, I glanced around at the others. Our clothes were wet and covered in soot, and we all looked like we had been to the underworld and back. But we were alive. My energy level was lowering from having to use so much of it, but at least we were all okay. We just needed to get back around to the front of Typhon. And then we would use Medusa's head to do what we came here to do. But the chariot jerked again, and when I looked ahead, only one dragon remained. He was flying more slowly than ever. It was the biggest dragon, the pack leader. Danielle had washed the poison off of him as well, but his hide was red and raw, and his wings damaged and thin. Some parts were so thin that I could see straight through them. Every flap looked painful, as if his wings were about to rip apart. I doubted he had much longer. And without a dragon left to fly the chariot, we would fall into the churning lava below. Despite our powers, I wasn't sure how we would survive that. We needed the dragon to live. Chris, I said, looking over at him, fly me out to the dragon so I can heal him.
Good idea.
He stood up and raised his hands in preparation to use his power.
Get ready.
Air billowed beneath my feet, lifting me up so I hovered over the floor of the chariot. I floated up higher over the edge. And then I accidentally looked down at the hissing, flaming lava flow below. My stomach flipped at how high up I was, and I had to swallow down a wave of nausea. I couldn't even see any remnants of the fallen dragons. They must have been burned to ash and swallowed up by the lava. Keep flying, I called out to the lone dragon, hoping the words of encouragement would help him to push on. I'm coming over to heal you. He twisted his head to look at me, his eyes dim with pain and defeat. But the movement must have been too much for him, because his wings split at its thinnest point, straight down the center, and his features contorted in pain. No, I screamed, reaching forward to try to touch him. Only a few more feet. If he could hold on for a few seconds, I would be close enough to heal him. But he let out a long breath, his eyes rolling back into his head.
and he tumbled down to the lava below.
Chapter 28.
I screamed, watching the dragon fall down and thump into the lava. Flames engulfed his body, and once they died out, all that remained was an unrecognizable lump where he'd landed. Then the lump disappeared, and the dragon was gone. But even though the dragon had fallen, I remained floating where I was. I turned around and saw Chris standing on the chariot with his hands up in the air, his face scrunched in concentration. The chariot had dropped a few feet, but he seemed to be using his power to hold it, and me, steady. Everyone else on the chariot looked perfectly fine, and relieved to still be alive. Typhon still roared in the distance, trapped in the center of the crater, but for now, we were safe. Chris flew me back to join them, and I took one final glance down at where the dragon had fallen. I hadn't even known his name. Both times I'd made deals with him and his pack, I'd been too focused on getting what I wanted from him to complete our mission to bother to ask for their names. And now, I would probably never find out. I floated onto the floor of the chariot, and Blake rushed toward me, wrapping me in his arms.
"Thank God you're safe,"
he said, pushing my hair off my face and studying me as if making sure I was really here.
"When that dragon went down..."
He shook his head, his eyes darkening.
"I thought you would fall with him."
"I thought we all would fall."
Danielle stood and attempted to brush the soot off her jeans, even though it was hopeless.
"Chris, how long can you keep the chariot flying?"
"I'm not sure,"
he said, each word forced and strained. As he spoke, the chariot dropped a few inches. "Don't waste your energy talking," I told him. "Bring us around to the front of Typhon so we can show him Medusa's head and end him once and for all." I tried to sound confident, but truthfully, I was worried. Chris had lifted up the yacht on his own and flown it over Charybdis. But that was only because Zeus had given him the mint that had provided him with endless energy. The most he'd ever flown on his own was the five of us when we jumped from the tower of Kioni's ice palace. And that flight had only lasted for a few seconds. Keeping the chariot afloat was using up more of his energy than I thought possible. How much longer would he be able to keep this up? "We have to help him," I told the others. "Let's let him channel some of our energy too." After healing the others and myself so many times, I was already getting depleted of my own energy, and I imagined that the others were running low as well. But we had to do everything we could do to help Chris. If that meant channeling him our energy until we were about to pass out, then so be it. We all reached forward to touch Chris. Everyone but Kate.
"Aren't you going to help?"
Danielle asked her.
"I can't," Kate said, her voice sad. "I'm not mortal anymore. Now that I'm a goddess, the way that I access energy is different. Chris and I tried last week after we finished training. We thought that I could give him endless energy, like he had with Zeus's mint. But it didn't work. The fastest way to explain is that the energy that I access now is on a different wavelength. A wavelength you can't access. I can't access energy on your wavelength either. But with the four of you helping him, it'll be enough. It has to be enough."
I nodded and focused on calling forth energy to channel it into Chris. From the ways the others were concentrating, I could tell they were doing the same. Our energy must have helped him, because the chariot flew around to face Typhon. Typhon's head was ugly and enormous, larger than a house. He growled and raged, the ground shaking with his anger, the volcano flowing with more lava by the second and rumbling like it was about to burst. Luckily, we were still far enough away that he couldn't reach us from where he was rooted in the center of the crater. But he wouldn't be stuck there forever. We needed to act fast.
"It's now or never."
Kate stepped in front of us, raised Medusa's head high up in the air,
and pried her eyes open. Typhon's body racked with an anguished howl. And then, he turned to stone. Chapter 29. The volcano was exploding with ash and lava 1 second, and quiet the next. Kate zipped Medusa's head back into the bag. None of us said anything. We just stared, speechless, at the giant stone statue of Typhon. Then Chris stumbled, falling back onto the wall of the chariot. His skin was paler than I'd ever seen it. I couldn't imagine how heavy the chariot was. After all, it was made of all gold. Even with us channeling him, what energy we had left, he still had to use his own to keep us afloat.
Nicole,
he said, looking at me. His voice was strained and weak, and he took a deep breath, forcing himself to continue.
Stop channeling your energy to me. You need as much of it as possible for what's next.
I knew what he meant. We'd discussed the plan multiple times back at Darius's house, so I knew he was right. Reluctantly, I broke my connection with Chris. The chariot dropped, my stomach flipping at the sudden freefall, and I couldn't help it. I screamed. But we only fell a few feet before Chris regained his hold. He took another deep breath and flew the chariot toward the statue of Typhon, towering up from the volcano, grunting from the effort. His clothes were soaked in sweat, and his eyes had gone bloodshot from the effort. The other still held on to him, although they looked pale and weak. They must not have much more energy to give him. Which meant Chris was doing this mainly on his own. Typhon was so huge that in our chariot, we were slightly smaller than the palm of his hand. He whizzed closer, and once we were in arm's reach, I placed both of my hands on the stone. Despite feeling weak from all the energy I'd used so far, I dug deep down to think about how much I hated this monster for the danger he was going to inflict on the world, and called forth the black energy. If he'd gotten his way, he was going to destroy the entire planet. The eruption had already destroyed the nearby villages in Sicily, and that only would have been the beginning. My friends, my family, our lives, all of it would have been gone. All because of this evil, heartless monster in front of me. I gathered as much black energy as I could, until it felt like it was about to burst out of my skin, and shot it into the stone. Cracks appeared all over. But Kate already held her arms out, her palms facing Typhon, using her power to keep him together so the stone didn't explode into pieces when we were right in front of it. Chris flew us away, and I placed my hand on his arm again, giving him as much energy as I could. But after using so much black energy on Typhon, the energy I could collect and give to Chris was a mere trickle. I doubted it was doing much good, but I continued trying, since it was better than nothing. Once there was enough distance between us and Typhon, Kate let go of her hold of the stone, and the pieces shattered, hurtling into the lava and exploding into flames. The flames died down, the pieces of stone consumed by the molten rock below. Then Kate raised her hands again and cooled the lava completely. It turned from orange to black, and the flames and hissing stopped. All that was below us now was thick, solid rock.
The ground is safe, she told Chris. You can lower us down now.
But as he lowered the chariot, he looked worse than ever. His breaths were shallow as he struggled to keep us afloat. He was hunched against the wall, using it as support, and his eyes were half shut and bloodshot. His hair stuck to his face, drenched with sweat.
He didn't look like he could keep this up for much longer. He got us more than halfway down, but when we only had a bit further to go, the chariot tilted to the side. I screamed, gripping the ledge to keep myself from falling out. Then he lost his hold on it completely, and it tumbled to the ground. Chapter 30. My heart rose to my throat, and I screamed, my eyes meeting Blake's as we were thrown from the chariot. I landed feet first and tucked my chin to my chest to roll with the fall, relaxing my body and bending my knees, just like Darius had taught us in training. Each time I hit the ground, the air was knocked out of me. Finally, I came to a stop. I rolled myself over and sucked in a deep breath, staring up at the ash-filled sky. I'd survived the fall. I'd been banged up, and my head was spinning. But as far as I could tell, I didn't have any serious injuries.
Nicole!
Someone screamed my name. Kate,
we need your help. Now!
I moved my fingers, arms, ankles, and knees to see if anything was broken. Everything seemed okay, which was good, because I barely had any energy left. Definitely not enough to fully heal myself. And I didn't know the extent of everyone else's injuries. I had to save my energy so I could heal one of them if they needed it. I jumped up. My body ached at the sudden movement, and looked out to where Kate had called for me. Chris was sprawled on the ground nearby, and Kate was hunched over him, sobbing. Blake was hobbling over to them. His ankle must have been injured, but other than that, he seemed okay. Danielle had been thrown further to the side. She was just sitting up, and she cradled her wrist, which was twisted at an unnatural angle. The chariot was all the way off to the opposite side, upended so its wheels pointed out to the volcano. I ran toward Kate, kneeling down next to her to look at Chris. His eyes were closed, and he was so pale and still. Too still.
He's not breathing, Kate sobbed. I found him like this, and I don't know what happened to him when he fell. But he's not breathing. You have to help him. Please heal him.
I nodded, and despite barely having enough energy left to channel any more of it, I placed my hands on Chris to heal him. I felt nothing. It was just like when I'd tried to heal Rachel back in the Hydra's cave, and when I'd tried to heal Kate after she'd been turned to stone, and when I'd tried to heal Blake after finding him slashed and mauled in a puddle of his blood in the cottage. Chris's spirit was gone. I pulled my hands away from him, tears falling from my eyes when I looked up at Kate. I blinked, not knowing what I could possibly say to her. So I just shook my head and lowered my eyes, hoping she understood.
No.
She pressed her lips together, refusing to believe me.
He didn't even get injured in the fall. Look at him. He looks fine. He must have.
She sat back on her heels and gasped, realization dawning in her eyes.
He wasn't strong enough to fly the chariot for that long. But he did it anyway, so we could kill Typhon, she said slowly. He used up all his energy to save us.
No, he used up all his energy to save the world. I nodded, not knowing what to say to her. I just felt numb. We'd succeeded in killing Typhon, but I still felt defeated. Chris had pushed his powers to the point of death so we could live. Without him, we would have fallen into that lava and died. It wasn't fair that he was gone.
but I knew enough about the pain Kate must be feeling right now. I'd felt the same way when I found Blake, dead in that cottage. To know that nothing I said could help her. Instead, I placed my hand over hers, lowering my head and letting the tears fall.
Nicole?
Someone screamed my name and shook my shoulders. Danielle. She still cradled her wrist. From this close up, it was clearly broken, and her eyes were wide in panic. I looked at her, preparing to tell her the news about Chris, but she continued before I could.
Hypatia stuck beneath the chariot, she said in a rush. It must have landed on her when it fell. You have to come heal her. Quick.
Chapter 31.
I jolted back into focus and followed Danielle to the chariot. How had I missed this earlier? I'd seen the chariot when I'd landed, but I hadn't seen Hypatia near it. As I approached, I realized why. Hypatia was stuck around the opposite side, her lower half crushed under the golden vehicle. I couldn't see her injuries, but given the weight of the chariot, I assumed they were grave. She was pale. She must be losing blood. And her eyes were glassy and unfocused. Blake hunched down next to her, holding her hand and comforting her. I imagined he'd been telling her that I was on my way. But I barely had enough energy left after using so much of it during the fight with Typhon. I couldn't even heal my minor injuries. How was I supposed to heal someone who'd been crushed under a golden chariot? I wasn't sure if I could, but I had to try. Nicole, Hypatia said my name, smiling when she saw me. Her voice was strained and weak, and I could tell that speaking was painful for her. I'm so glad you're here. I kneeled down next to her, swallowing down fear as I placed my hand on her shoulder. I'm glad I'm here too. I tried to sound brave, even though I felt more helpless than ever. I'm going to do everything I can to heal you. But first, we need to get this chariot off of you. I looked up at the chariot, and doubt set into my mind. I couldn't imagine how heavy it would be. And with Blake's ankle injured, Danielle's wrist broken, and all three of us running low on energy, how were we supposed to pull this off? But we stood up and braced ourselves against the chariot, ready to push. Blake counted to three, and we put all of our weight into it. As suspected, it didn't budge. I grunted, pushing as hard as I could, but it still didn't move an inch. My head spun from the effort, spots dancing in front of my eyes. And I leaned against the chariot to catch my breath. I didn't have enough energy to push anymore. Once I could see straight again, I stepped back and lowered my arms, looking helplessly at the chariot. We need Chris, Blake said. Hopefully he has enough energy left over to help us out. My heart dropped at the realization that Blake had been here with Hypatia the whole time. He still didn't know about Chris. Chris didn't make it. I dropped my hands to my sides, fresh tears forming in my eyes. He used up all of his energy flying the chariot. He held on until the very end. When he lost control and we fell, it must have been because... My throat thickened with tears, and I swallowed, unable to continue. Because he had no more energy left at all. Danielle finished my sentence. Blake nodded and said nothing, apparently taking it all in.
He died a hero,
he finally said,
We'll make sure that he's never forgotten. It's what he would want.
It is. I sniffed, wiping the tears off my cheeks.
We can't do anything for Chris anymore,
Danielle reminded us softly.
We have to focus on who we can help.
Hypatia.
Chris wouldn't want us standing here crying over him when we could be saving her life.
I nodded and looked at the chariot again. There had to be another solution. Maybe we were approaching this from the wrong angle. But as I walked around it, I saw that the land it was on was completely flat. Once I came back around, I kneeled back down on the ground, no longer having enough energy to stand. Pushing the chariot to the side would have been so much easier if it were on a hill. I snapped my head up at the realization, hope surging through my chest. Kate! I said her name, even though she was too far away to hear me. If she can create a rift in the ground on the other side of the chariot, it'll be pulled down by its own weight. Gravity will take over. We won't have to push it. Danielle's eyes lit up, and she hurried to fetch Kate before I could say another word. I was grateful for that, because I barely had enough energy to keep myself sitting up, let alone to run. In the meantime, I held Hypatia's hand, leaning against the chariot and trying my best to comfort her. Danielle returned quickly with Kate. Kate looked shell-shocked by all that had just happened. But the moment she saw Hypatia trapped beneath the chariot, she snapped back into focus.
I can fix this, she said to Hypatia. You're going to be just fine.
Hypatia was too injured by now to speak. She must be losing blood fast. But she met Kate's eyes, her lips curving up into a small smile of thanks. Kate held out her hands, and the ground rumbled, a crack forming on the opposite side of the chariot. It teetered on the ledge, and Blake gave it another push. As predicted, gravity took over, and it fell in, revealing the horrible remains of Hypatia's lower body. Her legs were crushed, but that wasn't the worst of it. The chariot had gashed her abdomen, and now that the chariot wasn't holding everything together, her intestines were slowly making their way out of her stomach. I gasped, reaching for them to push them back in, but I had no idea where they were supposed to go. Blood covered my hands. Blood was everywhere. It was coming out too quickly to stop it. Spots danced in front of my eyes again, but I took a deep breath, forcing myself to focus. I'm going to need your help, I told Blake and Danielle. I used up too much energy in the fight with Typhon. I know. I don't have enough left to heal her.
I used most of mine in the fight, and when we were channeling it to Chris, Blake said. But I'll help as much as I can.
Me too,
Danielle said, and both of them put their hands on my arms, ready to channel what they could of their remaining energy. With both hands pressed against Hypatia's stomach, I reached out to the universe, trying to feel the white energy around me. It was faint, barely within reach. But somehow, I pulled some of it toward me. A tiny bit. And then a tiny bit more. It was a trickle entering my body, but it was better than nothing.
What's happening?
Danielle asked, her voice worried.
Shouldn't it be working by now?
I said nothing, not wanting to break my concentration. If I did, I worried that I would lose the small amount of white energy that I had managed to collect. But the trickle was getting less and less. And given Hypatia's injuries, we were running out of time. I had to use what I had gathered so far and hope for the best. I sent the small amount of white energy that I'd collected into her body. although I knew before opening my eyes that it wouldn't be enough. The amount I'd been able to collect had only been enough to heal a few scratches. The gash in her stomach hadn't healed. It looked the exact same as it had before I'd tried to heal her. Her intestines were only staying in place because I was holding them there. And the pool of blood around her body was growing. It had traveled so far that by now, I was kneeling in it. "It's not working," I said, my voice cracking. "We have to get to the hospital. Hypatia, do you have enough energy left to create a portal?" She opened her mouth to speak, but then her eyes glazed over, and she was gone. Chapter 32. I used my pendant to call to Apollo for help. He didn't come for us, but he stopped by Darius's and told Jason to create a portal for us to come home. I barely remember walking through the portal. I was in so much shock. But we did bring Chris and Hypatia's bodies with us. The next few days passed in a blur. My family tried to cheer me up over Easter, but the time spent with them didn't feel real. It was like I was separated from my body, looking down on everything, as I pretended to act as normal as I could manage. All I could think about was Chris's upcoming funeral. The only small comfort I had was that after his great sacrifice, he would almost surely be sent to Elysium, the Greek equivalent to heaven. On the night of the funeral, Blake, Danielle, Kate, and I returned to Chris's gravestone. He'd been buried next to the statue of Zeus, which was appropriate, given that Zeus was his godly ancestor. The cemetery had been packed that afternoon during the service, but now it was only the four of us. We brought the Book of Shadows with us, because despite defeating Typhon, our mission wasn't over. There was one last thing for us to do. But to get started on that task, we needed to ask the Book of Shadows an important question. We wanted Chris to be with us for that. And this, asking at his burial spot, was the closest we would get to that happening. Kate brought out the Book of Shadows, placed it on top of Chris's gravestone, and rested her hands on the cover. "Ready?" she asked, looking around at each of us. We all nodded in response.
"How do we seal the portal to Kerberos?" she asked,
her voice echoing through the cemetery. The book glowed, and she gasped, yanking her hands off the cover. It opened on its own, the pages flipping themselves, as if they were being controlled by the wind, or as if possessed by a spirit. The glow illuminated our faces, and we stared at the book, waiting for whatever it wanted to show us. But the book didn't select a page. Instead, it slammed itself shut. The air behind it glimmered, and standing before us was Nyx herself. Chapter 33. Nyx wore the same black gown that she'd had on the first time we met her, the billowing skirt full of sparkling stars that twinkled with her every movement. Her skin was as pale as moonlight, her hair as dark as night.
"I received your question," she said, glancing at the book. "I have much to tell you, and I thought that answering through the pages would be far from satisfactory. So, I decided to pay you a visit myself."
"You've been the one answering our questions through the book this entire time?" Kate asked.
"Yes," Nyx answered. "As you know, thousands of years ago, I filled a comet with my magic and sent it across the sky, creating the portal to Kerberos and giving the Olympian gods the strength to lock the Titans inside.
but portals between worlds need more than the magic of the gods to keep them closed. They also need the magic of mortals, who can bind them to the planet. In this case, to Earth. And so, I chose 5 mortals for this task, and arranged that they all ended up in this town.
You mean us? Kate breathed.
Yes, Nick said. I chose the group of you.
But they all grew up here, I chimed in. I didn't. I grew up in Georgia.
This is true, Nix nodded. There was no need for me to arrange for your arrival until your powers were unblocked. You see, some of the head elders see demigods as dangerous, and centuries ago, they created a spell to block demigods from using their powers. But a few months ago, I filled the comet with magic again. This time the magic would connect the 5 chosen mortals, the 5 of you, to the elements. The magic in that comet also unblocked the powers of demigods all over the world.
Why did you choose us?
Danielle asked, looking around at our group.
We're all so different.
Each member of a team should have different strengths, and the 5 of you have that, Nick said. Your personalities embody the characteristics of your element, and your dominant heritages, the godly ancestor whose bloodline is strongest in you, give you even better control over those elements. Aphrodite was born from the sea. Ares has a fiery temperament. Zeus has power over the sky. Athena is level-headed and down to earth. And Apollo has an affinity for healing. Their blood in your veins reinforced your connection to your element. But due to your differences, you would not have worked together unless you had a push from the gods. So I designed your first mission, the scavenger hunt around town, as you called it, to teach you how to use your powers, work together, and trust one another.
You designed that whole thing? I asked. Even the prophecy that we were given in the beginning?
Yes, Nix nodded. The mission needed to have a starting point. So I visited a young witch in her dreams a few centuries ago and gave her the prophecy that would ultimately land into your hands and begin your journey.
What about the harpy?
Blake asked.
You planned on her being there too? And on her kidnapping Nicole's sister?
No, Nix answered. I placed the Book of Shadows near the portal to Kerberos so that you could learn the location of the portal. You were supposed to grab the book, bring it back to Darius's house, and then use it to ask me questions. The harpy acted on her own free will, although I do feel as though her being there pushed you to train faster and harder.
We almost died fighting her, Danielle said.
But you didn't, Nick smiled. And if you had, I could have convinced Kronos to allow me to travel through time and correct that mistake. I shivered, wondering how many timelines the primordial deities had created and destroyed. I had a feeling that I didn't want to know, especially because, technically, this was the only timeline that actually existed. All the other ones were gone.
We're getting off track, Kate said. I mean, this is all very interesting, and I'll have lots of questions later, but our original question still hasn't been answered. How do we seal the portal to Kerberos?
I suppose it's time that you learned, Nick said, with a sigh. Although, I fear that you're not going to like the answer.
It doesn't matter if we like the answer or not, Blake said. We need to know it if you want us to have any chance of closing the portal.
I know, Nick said. I just wanted you to be prepared. You remember what I said earlier about how the magic of mortals is the only thing that can seal the portal forever?
Yes, I said, anxious for her to continue.
That's because the portal is in between the worlds of Kerberos and Earth, she said. The worlds are pushing against each other, which has worn down the portal over time and weakened it. It will open fully on the summer solstice, unless you use your powers to close it permanently. To do that, you need to bind both sides of the portal with physical, elemental magic from Earth, and then seal it with the power